This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Eitan Gorlin, wrote and directed the film The Holy Land. It won the Grand Jury Prize for Best Feature Film at last year's Slam Dance Film Festival, which is a low-budget answer to Sundance. The film is very loosely based on his own experiences and observations. Gorlin grew up in an American Orthodox Jewish home, studied at a yeshiva, then went to Israel for a year to study at a Zionist yeshiva. He went back to Israel after graduating from college and worked as a bartender for a year. The Holy Land is about an Orthodox yeshiva student in Israel named Mendy, who is having trouble focusing on his studies. One of the things distracting him is his growing sexual urges. His rabbi quotes an obscure Talmudic passage and suggests that Mendy visit a prostitute to get it out of his system. The rabbi thinks the student will be back in no time, but that's not what happens. When Mendy ventures out to Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, he falls in love with Sasha, a Russian emigre prostitute, and becomes friends with Mike, the owner of a bar in Jerusalem. In this scene, Mendy and Mike are talking late at night on the beach after the bars have closed.
Christ, I need a drink. What's open around here?
Well, I don't know. I don't live in Tel Aviv. I guess everything's closed by now.
Yuppie f***. I don't even think about closing my bar till I hear buses running.
You own a bar?
Yeah, in Jerusalem.
Jerusalem? I didn't know there were any bars in Jerusalem.
Mike's place. Mike. Me, Mike, Mike's place.
Oh, you got yeah.
It? Craziest bar east of Sarajevo.
You've been to Sarajevo?
Sure. Still be there if it wasn't for those f***ing peacekeepers. I used to be a war photographer. Are you a drinker?
Sure.
What are you doing Wednesday?
Nothing.
No, no. Coming to my bar in Jerusalem. Got a great band playing. Everybody's gonna be there. Even the Love Boat girls.
Is Sasha gonna be there?
You really like her, don't you?
Eitan Gorlin, welcome to Fresh Air. Some of the story in the Holy Land is set in a bar in Jerusalem, which is modeled on a place called Mike's Place, a real bar in Jerusalem, where you actually worked as a bartender. Would you describe the real bar?
Well, the real bar was founded by somebody who's still a very close friend of mine and lives in Canada now, Mike. And he was a Canadian war photographer who came to Israel to shoot the first Intifada and the first Gulf War. And about 1992, he opened a bar. And the real Mike's Place was tiny. It was quite narrow. You had to descend a couple of steps to get into it. You couldn't see in, you couldn't see out. And we kept the bar open basically until we heard the buses running. So, you know, most bars in Jerusalem, I mean, it was a heavy drinking bar. And the kind of music we played was sort of like Jim Morrison and Janis Joplin. It was a little bit of a throwback to the sort of like wild early 70s. I think that was kind of what Mike was going for. But it was mostly the clientele, because Mike himself was a photojournalist. We had a lot of journalists and war photographers who would come through. But, for example, we'd have, like, when I worked there, there was an Irish construction crew, which was doing renovations on the Dome of the Rock. And since it's the Jordanians who control the dome, they pay, you know, they're the ones who paid for the construction firm. So it's the construction company that was doing a lot of work in the Middle East. And these guys who are now working on the Dome of the Rock had just come from Iraq, where they were building Saddam Hussein's palaces. And if you remember the run-up to the first Gulf War, where Saddam took some Westerners hostage just sort of to buy time. So some of these guys who are now sitting at our bar and renovating the Dome of the Rock had just been hostages of Saddam Hussein, though they told us that it was, you know, they ate caviar and it was all quite pleasant. And next to them, you would find local Arabs, you know, Jerusalem Arabs who lived in the city. We had people from the former Soviet Union, people who had left Eastern Europe. And it was just this real eclectic mix of people. And I remember like 6 o'clock in the morning, we would look around and say, what are all these people doing in the same room? Which in some respect is what I say about Israel. What are all these people doing in the same room?
In your movie, The Holy Land, Mendy, the rabbinical student, you know, when he goes out into the world, the person who he becomes closest to is a prostitute, because after all, his rabbi basically has given him this advice, you know, meet a prostitute. You're so absorbed in your own sexual urges, go into the outside world and actually meet a prostitute. So he does, and he meets her, and he falls in love with her. Is there a big prostitution trade in Israel? Was there one when you were living there?
10-15 years ago, I mean, there were prostitutes in Israel, but, you know, really, it's something you'd barely notice. But, I mean, it reached proportions where you can't miss it. I mean, I've been to Amsterdam, I've been to Bangkok. I mean, it's, I think, at that same level. it's not something. I mean, if you were to just stroll through Tel Aviv, it's not. I mean, you couldn't miss it.
There's a character in the movie called the Exterminator. Describe his character in the movie and who he's based on in real life.
Well, I mean, I spent, you know, the year that I spent studying in Israel, it was, I think, 86, 87, before the first Intifada broke out. And I studied in a yeshiva that was very much, very messianic and very much involved in the settler movement. And each weekend they would take us to different caravans on hilltops. And I really had a chance to meet some of the most important people in the settler movement before anybody else had heard of them. I mean, it's basically people who believe that, even though I think today most settlers are economic settlers, which means that rent in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv is so high that you just get more space for less money, but at the core of the movement are people who believe very, very strongly in something. And they believe that we're on the cusp of messianic times. And in a sense, they're kind of ashamed of the last 2,000 years of Jewish history, and they kind of want to turn the clock back to when Jews were priests and warriors. And they're very much about expanding the borders of Israel and about sort of forcing the Messiah to come. The Exterminator specifically, so that's kind of the background. That's sort of, I mean, these are people who I lived with and traveled with, and some of whom are relatives of mine. But this specific character is based where I actually was hitchhiking with a friend from Jerusalem to Hebron, and there was a car that stopped for us. A settler car stopped, different from the film. I remember him saying, you can't sit in the front seat. It didn't make any sense to me why the front seat was open, why I couldn't sit there. And he said, no, I need it for my gun. And then as we drove, he never passed 15 kilometers on the speed limit. And he would just sort of, the M16 would go out the left window, would go out the right window. And the entire time, he insisted on talking to us in Hebrew, even though we were both American and very well spoke English. And he called himself the Exterminator.
So this is somebody who you met who basically drove through the territories with a gun, almost doing target practice, looking for Palestinians?
Well, he at least in the ride that we took, he didn't shoot anybody, but he was basically looking for stone throwers. He kept saying he's looking, he was always pointing to these, he says, that's where they hide. Actually, what he was doing was he was delivering, another thing that happens, a lot of these settlers, when they get into trouble, because they shoot somebody, often they kill somebody, and they get house arrest where they can't leave their house. So this person was actually delivering food to different very prominent settlers. And I guess that was his job. He would sort of, I guess, bring food from Jerusalem. I'm not quite sure, but I think it was packed with food, and he was delivering food to prominent settlers who weren't allowed to leave their homes.
Now, your story, your own personal story, has some parallels with the story of the rabbinical student Mendy in your film The Holy Land. You grew up in an Orthodox home in the United States, went to Israel, studied in an ultra-Orthodox yeshiva, lived in the occupied territory.
Well, I wouldn't refer to that as ultra orthodox. Ultra orthodox usually connotes the people in the black outfits who aren't particularly Zionist, and they're much more fundamentalist in their orientation. The school that I studied in, which was actually what was kind of a little bit exciting about it for me, was put less emphasis on the fundamentalism and more emphasis on the nationalism and sort of being on the cusp of history, almost like these larger than life historical players.
So in the community that you were living, did men wear the black hats and have the beards and payas, the long sideburns?
No, the house that I grew up in, no. My father has a PhD from Columbia, but the school that I switched to was along those lines. Like I originally went to what you'd call like a kind of a co-ed modern Orthodox school, but as I said, I kind of was very curious and I was sort of rebellious and I was also influenced by a teacher, which I think is something that also happens in the Muslim world and also happens in the Jewish world, where, and I think you read about this a lot in the Muslim world, where it's the teachers who very much influence the kids. Because you might take like a typical Moroccan, typical Muslim Moroccan family who is quite moderate, actually, and not that extreme in their religion, but they don't know enough Quran to teach the kids Quran. So they kind of bring in these teachers from the outside, and it's these teachers, who are proficient in Quran who then influence the kids. What people aren't paying attention to is how radical and extreme the teachers are. And I think there was something similar also sort of in the modern Orthodox world among Jews, where it was hard to find teachers who could propagate sort of a middle road. So the teachers were quite extreme and came from sort of extreme backgrounds and often influenced the kids. So then you kind of spend a couple of years not quite sure who to listen to, and you just sort of bounce around until you find your place.
In your movie, The Holy Land, Mendy, the rabbinical student who leaves the yeshiva to experience life for what he thinks will be just a few days, says to his rabbi, when his rabbi tries to convince him to come back, he says to his rabbi that he wants to find God in life. He wants to see God in the real world, not just to experience God in the confines of the yeshiva and in the confines of the very orthodox life. Has that been something you would describe as an ambition of yours?
I think one of the things that most one of my biggest questions growing up Orthodox was that the stories we read and the heroes we were supposed to worship were so different than the lives we were living, because we kept reading about these, you know, King David had the story with Bathsheba, and the biblical stories were people who were living life to its fullest. They were warriors. They were killers. They were adulterers. You know, they were involved with black magic, sometimes witches, and they were just living this really exciting, at times perhaps immoral, but they were definitely sucking the marrow out of the bone. And yet we would read these stories, be told that these are our heroes, and these people are almost like, you know, as close to God as a human being could be. But then they would say, you know, you can't look at a woman, or a woman needs to cover her hair, or you can't hear a woman's voice. Or, you know, that to me was the contradiction. The stories that we were studying, though actually in the yeshiva world they don't really study Bible so much, they study more Talmud, which was written later. But the stories we were studying were just so different than the lifestyle we were expected to maintain.
When you were studying at the Zionistic, nationalistic yeshiva in Israel, did it give you a feeling of great community?
Yeah. And people also forget that there's a real mystical and spiritual component to this movement. Friday night, I mean, first of all, it's just so picturesque. I mean, you know, you find yourself outside of Beit El, and especially people who grew up with the Bible. And that's why I'm saying there's a soft side. That's why I don't like to sort of make these blanket brush statements about, I mean, what was interesting to me about these, what I would call these Messianic Zionists, is they were actually much less fundamentalist than the more traditional diaspora Eastern European Jews. They were more mystical and they were more active. They would serve in the military. They were very much about hiking, about enjoying the nature, about knowing their history. So that's how you kind of get swept up in it, especially if you come from America and all of a sudden, literally it's like being, you're walking through villages that haven't changed in 500 to 1,000 years. And I mean, you have wells and you have donkeys and goats and shepherds. And on some level, it's almost like being the sheriff. It was, I'm sure it's very similar to what the early pioneers felt, you know, when they were sort of, you know, in that wild, untapped, new world. But the difference is that these settlers really believe that this is their land and that God gave it to them and that they are indigenous and they've always been there. They just took like a 2,000 year break.
We were talking earlier about how when you were living in Jerusalem, you worked at Mike's Place, which was a bar run by a former war photographer. And, you met a really wide range of people there. There was also a branch of that bar in Tel Aviv. And that bar, the one in Tel Aviv, was bombed in the spring. 3 people were killed and I think about 50 people injured. Did you know any of the people who were hurt?
I know the owners of the bar, the people who kind of took it over from Mike. And I've been to that bar because I was living in Israel up until about 14 months ago. So I've been to the Tel Aviv branch. I don't know if I knew anybody who was hurt, but for example, if you notice, like in the movie, the band that we have playing in Mike's Place, that is a band that plays at Mike's Place. So I think the Rav Shmuel who performed in the film for us, I think his bass guitarist was in a coma for a while. And then they had benefit concerts all across North America to sort of raise money to help the survivors and reopen the bar. I know all the people who run the bar because they're kind of holdovers from when Mike was there.
Well, Eitan Gorlin, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you.
Eitan Gorlin wrote and directed the new film, The Holy Land.